Hi, everyone. Great honor to be here. Sorry you're going to have to put up with 10 minutes of my accent just before lunch. And if the topic bores you, let me know and I will switch to my beloved language. And hopefully we'll start to entertain you in many different ways. So I've got a lot of skills that you don't know about. As I was introduced, I'm the CEO for Randstad in the region. And maybe I should give you a bit of a background of the team that I lead, so it gives you a bit of an maybe appreciation of the issues that I'll talk about, not only from a keynote speaking, but also as a practitioner in the day-to-day work. So I've got a workforce of about 2,500 people. As you've said, I look after India, and if you know anything about India, this is a very interesting and challenging workplace with a lot of young people joining the workforce, and also some more senior people, and that creates a very different set of challenges in a place like India, where you've got still pretty much the caste system and a lot of things that we don't know here, or we don't know anymore here in the Western world. The average age of my workforce is about 34, so when we talk about engaging the younger generation, I know that firsthand. I hear every day about the topic of work-life balance and purpose, which I'm sure we'll be talking about later on during the panel. And the only brief I got from the other members on the panel was Jan coming to me earlier on and say, "Can you please say something I don't agree with, so that I can have an argument with you when we're on stage later on?" So, you know, if you think you're freaked out, I am really, really scared. Really scared now about what I'm going to say. There's a couple of things that I would like to mention before I go into some discussions around more the mature age workforce, which is really the angle I wanted to talk about for this particular conversation, and primarily because we're going to talk a lot about the younger workforce later on in the panel. The topic of work-life balance is something that really comes out, particularly in Australia, really, really strongly, and way more than what we see anywhere else around the world. Every year we do an annual survey of over 150,000 people to check, and that's an independent survey, to check what job seekers are looking for in their workplace. And everywhere around the world, you know, long-term job employment comes really high, salary and benefits come very high. The only two countries in the world where that doesn't score first are Australia and New Zealand. And in Australia and New Zealand, the thing that scores the highest is work-life and balance. So if you live and you are sitting at the table thinking, whatever, just be aware that this is what most of the people are actually looking for when they're looking for a new employer. And we communicate a lot in terms of engagement of the different ages in the workforce around things like corporate social responsibility, international mobility, development, career opportunities, etc. That doesn't count for anything when people are actually looking for a job. It starts counting the day they start working with you, which is a very different mindset. And we have to really think about how do we actually attract people to us when we are looking for our new employees, and then what is then the proposition we have to offer to actually keep them with us in the workplace. To give you a bit of an idea of the scale of what we do and maybe the vision, I heard you talking about your vision. Our vision as a company, we are now the largest HR solutions business in the world. Our vision, our stated vision, is to meaningfully impact the working lives of 500 million people by 2030. So not insignificant numbers. We are already touching today about 200 million people around the world. We are giving work every day to about 700,000 contractors around the world. In my patch, about 75,000 contractors go to work every day. And in Australia, on top of that, we will place about 11,000 people in permanent employment. So, you know, quite big numbers and gives us a good feel of what people are really looking for. Now, on the topic of mature workforce, we have just launched a white paper which is called The Golden Opportunity in the Age of Talent Scarcity. And that really focuses on the older generation. And I will be happy to let you know that I will, in about 4 months from now, consider myself part of the mature workforce, because I will then, and you will all be invited to my party, I will be then turning 50, which in the age of today, 50 is considered mature. So As a joke, by the way, I do play soccer or football on the weekends, and I was looking for my own team and the ranking of my own team, and I recently found, I thought I was playing in the over 45 category, and I was looking for the ranking of my team in that competition, and I couldn't find myself until I actually looked under the category of senior. I cannot tell you how I felt the rest of the afternoon. I actually turned to my wife and said, "Darling, I'm a senior." I still do not get any discounts anywhere I go, by the way, so I just wait for that. A couple of stats that we're talking about in that particular survey that I thought will be of interest to everybody. By 2050, I don't know if you realize, but 22% of the workforce in the OECD countries will be over the age of 55. That is an increase of 250% compared to what it is today. When you take into consideration the aging workforce and the lack of growth at the young or people having less kids than they had in the developed countries, that will actually generate a lot of people who are today considered mature. And in Australia, it's actually, we think it's pretty bad here. If you go and work in Asia, where I spend quite a bit of my time, when you get past the age of 45, you're almost kind of irrelevant. If you start looking for another job, people look at you as, you know, somebody who's really old, and then you know you really have a big issue about looking to your next career. What is interesting when you look at Australia and New Zealand is, and again, facts maybe you don't know, but in New Zealand, 3/4 of the people over 55 actually have a job. New Zealand's rates in one of the top 3 countries around the world with employment of the mature workers. So I know where I will move when I reach the age of 55. Australia, in that context, only ranks as number 17 in the world ranking in the OECD countries, which is a bit scary considering, you know, the size of our economy and, you know, how rich a country we are and how many opportunities we actually have in the marketplace today. 50% of employers, we've polled 700 companies, and obviously the white paper will be released. We've polled 700 larger organizations. Only 50% of them have what we call late-stage career initiatives. And 45% provide reskilling and retraining for their older workers. Again, you know, we can think about that as actually not too bad. You know, 1 out of 2. Who provide some reskilling or redeployment opportunities or have a plan. But I will encourage you to think about the fact that, you know, our economies are not made of the large organizations. They're made of a lot of the small and medium-sized companies. And I don't have the number because we didn't poll that, but I could absolutely guarantee that if we did include that those kind of companies into the makeup of our survey, the percentage would drop drastically from 50% to maybe 10-15%, unless you start looking at people who have created their own company as part of their mature aging workforce plan to actually look after themselves, you know, as they go into retirement. What is also really interesting, and I'm trying to tell you points that you haven't heard about 50 times already. I could talk to you about the first time in our lifetime that we've got X number of generation working next to each other. I'm sure you've heard that 50,000 times, so I'm not going to go there. What I will talk about is the fact that when you actually employ people of the age of 50 and above, what you do find is that it's 2.4 times they will stay longer with you than the younger generation. So in the same sentence, very often what we talk about is attrition and how many of us are facing attrition issues, you know, where we're talking about, you know, how can we keep people here? And in the same sentence, we say, oh, let's not employ people who are too old because, you know, they don't have all the skills. I think we really need to change the paradigm and the way we think, considering that, and I'm the first one, by the way, to actually want to recruit more people of an older age, because if I could do that, I know I would keep them for longer than the average worker who starts and turn up with us, you know, every month in the office. That's just a fact. If I look at some of the other benefits of the older workforce, again, some of the assumed implications of having an older workforce is they will be sick longer and more often. And what you find when you look at the stats, it's actually exactly the opposite. They are sick a lot less, and they will be at work with you most of the time, and they will not be not taking their sick days as annual leave, which, you know, quite happen quite often with our new generation, where you know, sickness days or personal leave, you know, kinds of become an entitlement as part of your annual leave days, which again you might be thinking in your head, who's that guy? What is he talking about? I've been here 20 years, or I've been in and out of Australia for 20 years. You've had the privilege of giving me an Australian passport, so sorry, you're stuck. I'm staying here. But I have noticed in Australia in particular, you know, the use of personal leave and sick leave as basically an entitlement as an annual leave pass. And that's also a reason why in our organization, we have a big debate going on where we want to give more leave to people who have been with us for a long time. But the debate between the senior executive team is, should we do that? Because if we do that, that adds on top of personal leave, annual leave, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we end up having people away from the office for 50 days in a year on top of the weekends, right? And that starts to be quite unmanageable for us. There are many things that companies should be looking at. And I don't want to bore you to death. I had 10 minutes, so I'll make it as short as possible because I think you'll get more value from an exchange between us of what we agree on and what we disagree on. But there are a few things that we need to be looking at. One is, how do we build a more diverse and inclusive culture within our organizations? And, you know, I wish I could be standing in front of you and giving you a recipe. French people are good at giving recipes, but in this particular case, there is none. The only way to do that is to actually start the conversation. And maybe that's the second point we should be looking at is, how do we, because every company will have a different way of looking at things. Every company will have a different type of workforce, a different age pyramid, depending on the experience and depending on the sector that you work in. But really starting the conversation and having a way to create this inclusive conversation and culture is something that needs to be looked at. And that starts very often with building an EVP. What is the value proposition that you're going to put out to the market and try to live up to every day? And does that value proposition match, when you are in the company, what you've spoken about when you are outside of it? Something else that we need to do is to look at, and I would encourage all of us to do that, and I'm very often guilty of it, we look at age brackets and age groups as a group. And I think that's the biggest mistake we can make as business leaders or as managers in business. I think the big trend for everything is, for everyone, should be about looking at people as individuals. You know, one situation might be very different from another, and the answer to that situation may also be very different from another. So we should be having a wide range of things that are available for people to take depending on what their personal circumstances are. So how do we build that, and how do we do it in a way that doesn't cost us too much money and also gives us the ability to deliver a true service and a true value to our employees? How do we uncover bias? And I don't know what the panel will have as a discussion. I'm sure at some stage, I haven't spoken to them, but I'm sure at some stage we'll talk about AI and the risk to the workforce and the fact that we're all going to be replaced by robots, which, by the way, I do not buy into at all. But there are certain things that we now do more and more with the help of AI, and there are many discussions around AI and the bias that people put in the AI as they program, you know, the discussion and whatever happens through those different means of selecting people. What you will find, we've been privileged, and I'm under embargo of talking too much about it, so I will only say the little bit that I can. We've invested 17 million euros this year with one of the biggest IT player in the world to actually build a matching engine, the first and only unbiased matching engine to jobs, but also conversation engine for candidates. And that will come to the fore most probably early 2020. We've just started the pilot 12 days ago. And that AI is now able to match people to jobs in the potential of about 85%. So, you know, the sourcing and matching happens, and there's a huge amount of information that's been put behind that we talk about how we've been able to take the bias out. And it will be the most inclusive from a diversity perspective, from an age point of view, in any matching engine that will be available in the marketplace today. The other thing we need to think about for the aging workforce is how do we transfer knowledge? What we lose when we lose people who have been here for a long time is all this institutional knowledge that we have. And as early as this morning, I was speaking to my head of sales. And what we were talking about is, it's not about sales. It's about the relationship we build with people. And the corporate culture and the corporate glue is also about the knowledge that we have of each other. By the way, start your lunch. I feel really guilty. Start eating. Any good French person knows it's better when it's hot than when it's cold. Don't feel guilty. Don't make too much noise. I know where you live. But really the idea is, you know, how do we transfer that knowledge so that, you know, we don't lose all of that out the door when people are leaving our organizations and they've been there for a long time. And the last thing we need to look at is, you know, how do we structure our roles? So, you know, we can, again, cater for the flexibility. We are very good in Australia at catering for people when they come back from maternity leave, for example. I'm at any time during the year, I would have in Australia alone about 40 of my staff who would be out on maternity leave. And when they come back, we always find a way to give them a part-time role if they want to, if they want to work 3 days, if they want to work from home. We are very good at giving them the flexibility. Do we do the same when somebody is in the aging workforce or the mature workforce? Do we have that same open-mindedness when we are talking to them about the need for them to be a bit more flexible in their commitment, or they need to go, you know, on a 2 or 3 days basis? The last point I will make, because the chicken does actually look very good. The last point I will make is, we will be worth nothing in the future than the capabilities we have. So, you know, as human beings, I think we need to get on the journey, and we all in this room, and I put myself in that bucket, in the future we will only be as good as the competencies and the capabilities that we bring to the table. Our ability to actually be on a lifelong journey of learning has been a topic of many conferences that I've attended in the past, but I think it's becoming more and more a reality than ever. And our ability, and I've seen a lot of research on that, but our ability to acquire transferable skills that will be able to be used in very varied role is something that will differentiate us in the future. If we do not embark on that journey ourselves, I think we are doing ourselves a disservice. The big question, though, is what is the role the corporate should play in that? Should we be providing, as an employer, should we be providing our people the tools for them to go and gain those skills? And I'm not going to give them all they are, because I've got them, but you know, you get bored. By the end of it, there's a list of about 12 we should definitely be gaining all the time. Is that the responsibility of the employer? Or is that the responsibility of the employee? Or how much of it is a joint responsibility? And what are we willing to do on both sides for us to be able to actually prepare people for the future of work? On that note, I think I've exhausted my 10 minutes. I hope you're enjoying the lunch. I hope I didn't bore you too much. And I look forward to coming back onto the panel. I also hope that, Jan, you've got something you disagree with me, so that we can have a good argument and still be friends at the end. Thanks, everyone.